Welcome to MTSU On the Record. I'm Jenna Logue, and we're coming to you from the campus of Middle Tennessee State University in Murfreesboro, Tennessee, and the studios of WMOT-FM. This just in, the Cold War is over, but it's been over at MTSU for a great long time, because one of our most unique study abroad opportunities at this university is Project Cuba. It lasts for 3 weeks, and it gives students an opportunity to experience Cuba in a way that will probably give them new insights into the country and probably the Caribbean as a whole. The man in charge of Project Cuba is Dr. Rick Morris. He's here with us today to talk about it, and we'll be back to do so in just a moment, but first a few words from the friendly folks at mtsunews.com.
Here are a few of the stories now on mtsunews.com, the university's news and information website. MTSU President Sidney A. McPhee and Dyersburg State Community College President Karen A. Bowyer recently signed an agreement that will enhance the educational experience of students attending both schools. The agreement includes dual admissions, concurrent enrollment, reverse transfer, consortium agreements, and cooperative advising for students. An 11-member MTSU team recently took top honors in the Bold Warrior Challenge Regional Competition in Fort Knox, Kentucky. The first-place finish earned the team a berth in the International Sandhurst Competition to be held next April at West Point, New York. And during November and early December, students in Dr. Jackie Gilbert's Principles of Management class will talk to students at Oakland High School in Murfreesboro about bullying, a public health concern that has grown into a worldwide problem. Students will address such issues as mobbing, cyberbullying, and stalking. For MTSU News anytime, go to mtsunews.com.
Dr. Rick Morris of the Department of Foreign Languages and Literatures is our guest today. He's also the director of the Project Cuba program, the three-week study abroad program. It was dormant for a while, and then you helped revive it and bring it back. There's some new news about it this year that is especially good news for students who are strapped for cash in these bad economic times. Why don't we start with that?
Well, that's definitely true. The two main draws this year for any student who's strapped for cash are, first of all, a $500 subsidy to any student who goes. That means that for every student automatically has $500 sort of to their credit at the start, and this will help defray the program cost. Also, the university has agreed to provide a tuition scholarship is what it's being called, that will be equal to approximately 25% of summer tuition in 2012 for any student who regularly pays in-state tuition.
And for the 3 weeks that the students are there during the summer of 2012, they'll be in Havana. And what will they spend that time doing?
Well, the first week will be spent learning about Cuban culture in a custom course that will be taught by local Cuban faculty affiliated with the University of Havana. The course will be taught in English, and it'll involve some classroom and also some field trips, site visits around the city. It's a great city to get around in and go to actually see the places that we're learning about.
And is so there a lot of public transportation available?
It's not so much the public transportation as it is just that it's a very compact city and that nothing's really far from anything. And so it's quite easy, however it is that you travel, to get from point A to point B to visit this monument or that monument. So the first week we'll be learning Cuban culture. And then the second and third weeks of the program, students will actually be enrolled in the summer language program at the University of Havana. It's a program participated in by students from around the world, not just from MTSU. They'll be placed into a Spanish language class at their level, and they'll study Spanish 3.5 hours a day for 2 weeks, which is, it sounds like a lot, and it is a lot. But it's the type of experience that really helps a student become fluent in a short period of time. The experience is far greater than any classroom experience. The experience of being there, the site visits, visiting the Museum of the Revolution, for example, visiting the independent artist's studio, for example. All of these things are experiences that that go beyond the classroom and yet which count completely in the overall scheme of things.
You will not spend all your time, if you go, with your nose in a book. That's the whole point, for you to experience Cuba holistically, not just in the classroom.
That's absolutely right. The faculty have a lot of enthusiasm and they vary their teaching style. I've seen them in action this year. Some of them are very dynamic. They all have knowledge that goes well outside the classroom. And they, in fact, are the ones who take us on many of the site visits.
Now, how much Spanish would you have to know before you sign up? Would you have to meet a certain proficiency level before you go, or can you be utterly ignorant beyond hola and gracias?
It's okay not to know any. It helps to know some whenever you travel someplace. And I'm not telling anybody that they can't come because they're a beginner. If anybody is interested in Cuba, they should probably find a way to go this year. For a variety of reasons. And one of them is just because the Project Cuba is very sensitive to the political climate between the two countries, and that climate could possibly change with the next presidential election. We don't know exactly what the outcome of that will be, but the outcome of that election might affect whether Project Cuba has a 2013, 14, 15, and so on version. A student who knows virtually no Spanish is welcome to come because they can learn some on site. The culture program is taught in English, and of course they would be able to use the resources of other members of the group who know some Spanish. The immersion program will definitely be intensive for anybody, regardless of their skill level, because it will be entirely in Spanish and often taught by faculty who don't speak any English.
Perhaps we should point out, since you are in the Department of Foreign Languages and Literature, is that you do not have to be a major in that particular discipline in order to go on this study abroad trip. You can have any major.
Our travelers pretty much have represented all the majors that you can think of in past years. We've had everything from interior design to electronic media. There do tend to be a lot of Spanish majors and minors. That's because we recruit somewhat heavily inside the department. It's the easiest place for me to recruit directly to students. I mention it in my classes, and it's billed as a Spanish immersion trip to them. But it can be pretty much anything to anybody who's interested in learning about Cuba and willing to develop their Spanish while they're there.
Certainly history majors, certainly political science majors, certainly anthropology majors, sociology majors, all of the above.
Absolutely. Those that you mentioned, in fact, are three of the most well-represented majors on past trips.
How many can you take?
We have an optimum, which would be about 15. I think that's an ideal size, and that's what we're shooting for right now.
What do your prior participants in Project Cuba tell you about their experience when you ask them for feedback?
Almost invariably, they tell me that it was the trip of a lifetime, that there was nothing else like it that they've ever done. I think it's the combination of the mystique of being in Cuba, the excitement of being someplace that so few Americans ever visit, with the idea that it's so different from what we're used to here in the United States, and so different from anything that they're likely to experience again. It's pretty much, for most students, one chance to visit Cuba while they're students, and that chance usually doesn't come again. Definitely, students come back to me with superlatives.
We're talking about Project Cuba on MTSU On the Record. I'm Jenna Logue, and we'll be back right after this.
The MTSU Educational Talent Search, or METS, reaches out to students in grades 6 through 12 in Coffee, Grundy, and Warren counties. We provide youngsters who have college potential with educational and financial aid counseling and guide them as they determine their educational and career goals. More than 95% of Educational Talent Search students graduate from high school, and more than 79% enroll in post-secondary education. This is METS Coordinator Debbie Frisbee.
For all the latest MTSU information, go to mtsunews.com.
Dr. Rick Morris, who is the director of Project Cuba, a unique study abroad experience at MTSU, is our guest today. Let's do a little post-Cold War myth-busting. What are the biggest misconceptions about Cuba that need to be dispelled?
Well, one of them is that, Fidel Castro is the president. I'm surprised at how many people realize that he no longer is the president, that's been passed on to his younger brother, Raul, in the past several years. Another myth is that he smoked cigars. And in fact, in all the black and white photos that we see, he very frequently was. But he hasn't smoked cigars since about 1980. So, that's 30 years smoke-free. We do tend to have our perception of Cuba filtered heavily by the media, and that's the media that we choose to follow. We might take, for example, in 2000, the Elian Gonzalez issue that most Americans heard about, yet very few actually really know the details of on either side.
What about Cuban exiles in Miami? Have we not also tended to view that island through the eyes of them and their descendants, refugees from the nation?
The memories and the stories of Cuban Americans are fascinating to me, and I hold them in very high regard. And I just feel like I should say that before answering this question. They're fascinating, and there's a lot of heartbreak, and there's a lot of sadness in them when I hear them. That said, we should be seeking a broader perspective on what has happened in Cuba and what is happening in Cuba. And one of the best ways to do that is by going and visiting and seeing it happening at a very interesting time in its history. Raul Castro, the current president, is showing signs of openness at the same time as he's showing signs of not being very open. It's fascinating to watch the news from day to day, even here in the United States. Imagine a day in Cuba watching the news and hearing the Cubans discuss these developments taking place almost on a day-to-day basis and getting that perspective.
Can you envision a day when Cuba will become a vacation paradise for Americans like it was once upon a time, Americans of a certain economic stripe perhaps, when it will become a choice vacation spot just like other vacation spots in the Caribbean are for Americans?
That's a good question, and people ask me that, and honestly, I don't know. From year to year, we seem to draw closer to that and then farther from that particular state of affairs. I would like to think that Cuba might not be the same kind of vacation spot it was in the 1940s, because though it was very glamorous and exotic, there was a seamy underside to it that's undeniable, that's come out in history regardless of which side you're on. It does seem a shame that a city that is so close to the United States, Havana, population 2 million, closer to Florida than Memphis is to Nashville, is so far away.
How would you characterize Havana? Tell me about the lifestyle, the atmospherics, the economic strata, something about the personality of the city.
It is a city of contrast, in the purest sense of the word contrast. The seafront, which is several miles long, is beautiful. It's historic. Parts of it are crumbling, utterly crumbling, caving in crumbling. And other parts of it are being restored and look the way they must have looked when they were well cared for, being repainted and remodeled. And you see this throughout the city. As you go through Old Havana, you see parts of it that really are old and not kept up. And then you come to parts of the old city that that have been repainted, remodeled, redesigned, and made to look new again. You see definitely evidence of the colonial past, the fort across the Havana Bay that was held by the Spaniards and the British. Is a colonial fort in the truest sense, a very Caribbean fort in its style and appearance and sort of the majesty of it. Then you also see buildings from the Soviet era, the large, ugly apartment blocks that were sort of mass-produced as places for the workers to live. And you see all of this in one fairly compact capital city. You know, somebody might look across Havana and say that's not a small city, but when you compare it, you know, to Mexico City or Paris or some other city, it actually is quite a workable city to walk across. You can be in one place, go for a walk of about 30 to 40 minutes, and be on the seawall.
We'll pause for another short message and be right back with more about Project Cuba on MTSU On the Record.
The Middle East-centered MTSU seeks to promote greater understanding of the politics, history, and culture of this vitally important region of the world. Its mission includes the promotion of outreach programs and faculty research. The center sponsors lectures by Middle East experts and scholarly exchanges. We're especially pleased to offer a new interdisciplinary minor in Middle East Studies with courses in Arabic and Hebrew. This is Dr. Alan Hibbard, Center Director.
For all the latest MTSU information, go to mtsunews.com.
Dr. Rick Morris of the Department of Foreign Languages and Literatures is our guest today on MTSU On the Record. To what extent will the students of Project Cuba have a chance to get outside the city of Havana and experience the rest of the island while they're there?
That's a real important part of every trip. On this particular trip, we will be taking a day trip to Las Terrazas Bioreserve, which is, I think, maybe 70 to 100 miles to the west of the city. It's a unique area that has been established as a sort of a green zone. In many ways, it's a model community for certain environmental practices, economic practices, social practices. Sort of the socialist experiment at its most interesting. And we'll be spending a day there learning about that particular part of Cuban culture. We'll also be doing an out-of-town overnight excursion to the city of Matanzas, which is to the east of Havana. Which is located on the Canimar River, which is beautiful. It's an unspoiled, jungly river. You don't get rivers like that except maybe deep in the heart of the Amazon. And so we'll have a chance to get out and see what Cuba looks like away from the crowds. And it is beautiful.
How would you assess the Cubans regarding environmental awareness and environmental preservation? How eco-friendly is the Cuban nation?
Cuba's approach to environmental friendliness is very pragmatic in that they are definitely planning ahead for environmental problems in ways that we don't normally see planning take place in the United States. And this is facilitated by a very centralized planning system, which one would expect, and also by the fact that there's a huge need to save money, to cut costs, and often a sound environmental green plan is one way to do this.
How has the Cuban economy fared as the economies of several other nations around the globe, Greece, Ireland, the United States, many would say, seem to be eroding?
Cuba has been somewhat isolated from the economic problems in other countries, largely because it has a different type of system. It's sort of a hybrid communist or socialist capitalist system, and that gives the government a much greater yoke of control than we would know, for example. But it has definitely hit Cuba, and it's hit ordinary Cubans in very measurable ways, which is one reason that the Cuban government, under the leadership of Raul Castro, is considering some measures that really would never have been, it seems almost unimaginable just 10 or 15 years ago, such as privatizing certain ministries completely. The Ministry of Sugar, for example, which is very emblematic of the Cuban economy, was recently abolished, but it's being replaced by a private enterprise. And I think the government is realizing that a little bit of both central control and free market capitalism is ultimately what's going to help the country through its version of the recession.
But this is happening for pragmatic reasons, not for ideological reasons.
I think it is definitely pragmatic. I think that if you asked a very revolution-faithful Cuban whether they thought that these free market developments in Cuba were a good thing, I think they might say that they're a good thing, but what they would mean is that they are a helpful thing, perhaps even a temporary thing, given the circumstances.
So they're moving more toward a mixed economy rather than one that is draconian in either one direction or the other.
That's correct. It's so hard to say with Cuba because its planning is very centralized and can be very much determined by the state of affairs around the world.
How would you say the Cubans as a whole are doing in the historic preservation department?
That's a good question. There is a project going on in Old Havana that has been in progress as long as I've been visiting Cuba, which is will be 11, 12 years, slowly, though there is definitely an interest in rebuilding the city. What you see when you walk through Old Havana is that many of the restaurants or hotels are already updated, and they preserve the old charm, the 40s and 50s charm, but they've obviously been renovated. I think that ultimately what will happen is that with increased privatization of restaurants and hotels and services, we'll see more and more of that because it will be privately funded.
We'll have one more brief pause here, and we'll be right back with more about Project Cuba on MTSU on the Record.
The MTSU Department of Art has the newest facility for visual arts in the state with approximately 50,000 square feet of space, including high-tech computers and computer-driven equipment for multimedia, graphic design, printmaking, sculpture, painting, and ceramics. We feature a visiting artist lecture program and an exhibition program that exposes students to work by national and international artists. This is Jean Nagy, Chair of the Department of Art.
To find out more, visit mtsunews.com.
And we're back with Dr. Rick Morris talking about Project Cuba. You know, I think sometimes those of us in the Western world have a tendency to think of all Spanish-speaking nations as something of a monolith, as opposed to each nation having its own unique culture, despite the fact that they all speak the same language, which is, you know, it's rather absurd to think anything else. It would be as absurd as thinking that we're just like Britain and Australia because we all speak English. Tell me what makes the Cuban culture unique and stand out among the Spanish-speaking nations.
There are a few things, and the first thing that jumps to mind is that the nature of the Cuban Revolution what was very different from any other revolution in the Americas, in that it was a slave revolution. And that's, though the United States had slaves at the time of its revolution, it was not a slave revolution. That particular beginning for modern Cuba permeates the modern culture in ways that I don't see it in other countries so much. There is a tremendous pride in Afro-Cuban origins in Cuba today. There's a tremendous interest in Afro-Cuban religion, art, literature, music that one doesn't find in Mexico or even in other Caribbean countries.
What else about music, dance, the ways in which people express and enjoy themselves set the Cubans apart from other Spanish-speaking nations?
The Cubans take their art very seriously and also not too seriously at the same time, because it is a form of freedom that they have, and they recognize that. In a country where they don't have the same freedoms that we have, and yet all the same desires and impulses, art forms such as music, artistic expression, and dance pretty much carry the day. It's hard to walk through Havana or any part of Cuba without overhearing music, whether it's a party or whether it's just somebody listening to their radio. All Cubans dance, and they do it with passion, and they do it in a way that I don't think they do, even in other Caribbean countries, because it is their freedom.
Is there a digital divide in Cuba, or is Cuba just as in touch with cyberspace as any other country?
Excellent question. It's actually, if you looked at the figures for cell phone ownership, regular internet use, all the things that we very much take for granted in the United States and which we are all very much a part of, you'd be very surprised because some of these figures are down in single digits. Most of us don't remember when that was even the case in the United States. The projections for cell phone use over the next couple of years are surprising because although very few Cubans own cell phones, they are allowed to. And more of them are acquiring cell phones. They're completely legal. They're just a little bit expensive at the time. But it's predicted that within just a couple of years, these single digits could be up in 20-25% of all Cubans could be talking to each other by way of cell phone.
Is there a possibility that we might see the trade embargo totally evaporate in our lifetime?
We're not really ready for it on either side, unfortunately. I think that's the reality, that there needs to be some deep thinking before anything like that can happen as to what our relationship between the United States and Cuba, obviously, would look like as a result of that. And the problem is that even within the United States, we can't agree on what that would look like. And to some extent in Cuba also, there's very little agreement on what that should look like.
You've been to Cuba 6 times.
One of the things that amazed me the most was when I was there in Cuba, either the first or the second time, and a Cuban woman said that with all the years spent buddied up with the Soviet Union during the Cold War, the Cubans never really felt much closeness to the Soviets. They never watched Russian movies on TV. They never cheered for Russian teams. They didn't play the same sport. However, they always felt this closeness to Americans, even during the Cold War. It was a closeness that transcended the border. When a European movie is on TV in Cuba, nobody watches it, they say. I'm sure some do. But when an American movie is on, it's such a rarity that everybody stays home and the city becomes quiet.
Wow.
And it is amazing to think about that we are so connected.
If you want to sign up for Project Cuba, what is the deadline and what criteria do you have to meet?
The deadline for sign up for the 2012 program, which will be held in May, is December 1st. All that's needed at the time of sign up is a deposit for $300 and an application form, and then we'll take it from there.
And you have to be enrolled in MTSU as a student.
Yes, absolutely, yes. That is an important point, that you must be enrolled at MTSU as a student, undergraduate, in May of 2012. So no graduating before departure.
And the specific dates are May 26th, 2012, to June 16th, 2012 for the program.
That's correct.
And if people have questions, they can contact you at what number and what email address?
They can reach me at 898-2284 or via email at rmorris@mtsu.edu and also on Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube.
Dr. Rick Morris, Program Director of Project Cuba, thanks for being with us today.
Thank you.
MTSU On the Record, a news and information program about Middle Tennessee State University, is produced by the university's Marketing and Communications Office, which is solely responsible for its content. Read more about MTSU at our website, mtsunews.com. Podcasts of this program are available at mtsunews.com and on iTunes.